Jim Jensen, welcome to the Fearless Podcast. How are you doing today, sir?
Great. How are you doing? I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Jim, for those of you that don't know, for those of those that don't know about Lucky 7 Angus Ranch, maybe you could kind of introduce yourself, explain a little bit of your background and how you ended up raising cattle.
Okay. Well, it's that longtime family ranch. We live in the coldest place in the United States, probably the hardest place in the world to make a living. And so back in 1895, when my great-grandfather moved from Denmark and moved to the area, more than likely it was a little tougher than the movie Yellowstone. And more than likely he did everything that Yellowstone boys did and more. Just because that was outlaw country. But in 1895, he moved there. He's got stories where he actually was in the sheep raids up on the mountain. He actually housed the hole-in-the-wall gang and wasn't scared because back in that day, everybody that was in that area was outlaws. They did things to survive, and we don't want to do that today. But that was survival back in the day. It was said to be nothing but school marms and outlaws back in those days. So there was a rough history. We kind of have a little song right now that says, maybe tough enough in Montana, but there ain't no Duttons in this part of the world. So we did everything that they did other than the fact that we turned it into good. We don't have some crazy old blonde gal out there doing crazy stuff. If she would have walked into one of these old ranch wives' house in our neighborhood, she would have been saying Hail Mary within 15 seconds. They wouldn't tolerate a woman like that. So anyway, that was our history. It's coming on a sixth-generation ranch right now. It'd be the fourth generation of Jensens. James Jensen was my great-grandpa that started in 1895, and so the family tradition keeps going. My name's James, and I've got two children named James, and then James is coming down to the grandchildren, too. So long-time family ranch. Like I said, it's got the coldest average daily temperature of anywhere in the United States. We have a 22-day average growing season, frost to frost. We live in the mountains above 7,000 feet. And so that's what we deal with every day. We were a Hereford ranch for years, just because back in the day, that was kind of the only type of cattle that could actually live in that part of the world. When I got to Raines, I started looking into the Angus, and I started the Angus program about 30, 35 years ago and started bringing it in. Kind of an interesting note, the way we got into the final end of the Angus is that we had Hereford cattle and we had Hereford bulls and black bulls, and we have two different places, a winter place and a summer place. And one year after I seen how much better the black cattle were doing than the Hereford cattle, I just sent the black bulls over. My dad called me up, but he was a little bit upset about that. He said, "Where are you going to send them Hereford bulls over there?" And I says, "I'm not going to. You're not going to use them this year." And once he seen the results from then on, it was just a game changer. But back when I was 14 years old, my dad and I had some really, really powerful Hereford cattle. He bought some registered cattle, and then I was just picking the best out of the herd for wages. And we decided to go buy a Hereford bull, best Hereford bull we could afford back in the time, which I think somewhere between $4,500 and $5,000. But that was years ago, so that would be like $50,000 today. And I put half in, and my dad put half in, and we got the prettiest, best-looking bull we could afford, and he was just an absolute dandy. We turned him with the cows. A year later, you didn't know what the bull was. It looked like an anorexic milk cow was trying to die on a ranch. And he dried up every one of those Hereford cows completely and ruined every one of the cows that we already had, ruined our program. So I started this program kind of with a little bit of a burr in my back and a burr in my heart to say I'll never ever do that to somebody else. So we started it by saying we will raise our cattle tougher, not than the seed stock producer, but we will raise them tougher than any commercial person in the toughest place in the world. And our whole entire mission was the customer. We really want to work for the customer. We want our neighbors and our friends and our customers to be better. And so we ran kind of a survival of the fittest model on the program. And after we started selling a few bulls, we had customers call us up and say, "Hey, we used to be able to run 1,200 head of cows, and because of your program, we can run 1,800. So we weren't trying to do the feed efficiency, but we basically created a cow because of the environment and the way we treated them, that basically eliminated all the inefficient genetics. And then at that point in time, we bought some vertical mixer so we could weigh and we could get an actual ration every single day to those cattle. And we were feeding them about 65% of what the nutrition requirements were just to try and weed them out. Our limiting factor, as we always said, is when they start eating barbed wire, we're going to have to feed them a little bit more. So we did everything that the industry would say we couldn't do in order to create these cattle, because I basically wanted to make sure that there was no doubt we were going to be able to have cattle that would not do the same thing to our customers as the cattle did to us. And it just worked out really well. From there, we ended up getting a GrowSafe feed efficiency test system. We're the first Angus-only producer in the United States that's ever had one of those. We started feed efficiency testing scientifically. And then we, from there, was able to actually create a four-year guarantee, the only four-year guarantee still in America today. We did that kind of in spite of the rest of the people overfeeding their cattle and pampering them and giving them haircuts and serving feed. We thought we would have them follow and they wouldn't be able to do that. Yeah, it's impossible to have a four-year guarantee if you do it the way that typical Angus breeder or registered breeder does it. And that was like 15, 16 years ago, and we still haven't had anybody do it, but it's working quite well for us. And because of all of these things, so you have cattle that live longer, cattle that are healthier, cattle that breed back, cattle that have a calf, and then you have cattle that are feed efficient. In today's world, we got to looking at that, and it's like, well, we're creating cattle that make the customers absolutely the most money. But in today's crazy environmental movement, they're cattle that actually create less greenhouse gas emissions for found beef. And so we started thinking about that, watching the neighbors, watching what our cattle were doing, and they're simply doing different things than the rest of the Angus. We said, why would we call them Angus when the Angus cattle are probably not going in our direction, maybe actually, in my opinion, going backwards? Why don't we call them a new breed? And we started doing that, promoting a little bit of the environmentally friendly deal and international notoriety. We've gone on speaking events to UK, and we're kind of known as the feed efficient leaders and the environmentally friendly leaders in this deal. And we call our new breed of cattle Da Vinci's. Just then figured, dude, you can't have the best deal. I call them Da Vinci's. And so we will run with that until people understand it. These cattle simply, we understand cattle make you money when you get a live calf. You get a cow that breeds up. Cows that live longer, cows that live healthier, and cows that eat less grass. That's how you make money. There's no EPD that can give you these kind of qualities. That was kind of a little short story of what we have done.
And how long did it take you to develop the Da Vinci line? How many years do you think until from concept to product?
You know, we've probably been working on this since for 35 years. And understand, we didn't know we were creating this. We just said we were not going to create cattle that didn't do this. But it's kind of taken about 35 years in the process. And what we see today is the cattle we have on our place versus the cattle right across the street. They totally do different things. And the customers, when they come back and talk to us, because when you're doing something that nobody else has done, you about half the time you think you're maybe crazy, you know. And so when every one of your customers starts touting the exact same story, then it's like, hey, we actually did do this.
Yeah, that is awesome. So maybe if you could, you've kind of briefly mentioned what set your cows apart from the competition, but maybe if you could break that down a little bit more regarding the conversion ratio and the feed efficiency, maybe we could talk about that a little bit, about what makes Da Vinci different than your regular Black Angus.
So I guess some of the number, well, so what actually happened is you're running cattle in the toughest place on earth. So your survival of the fittest, you're creating cattle that are tougher, stronger, and more feed efficient. So then at an elevation above 7,000 feet, we have a problem called right heart failure. This is actually getting to become a problem in the feedlots as well. Ours is, we call it big brisket, high altitude disease. Theirs is just basically, I call it obesity. We're getting the cattle too fat too quick, and their heart and their lungs don't get big enough fast. So we had to do this PAP testing, which is pulmonary arterial PAP testing. Pulmonary arterial, I can't think of it right now, but Pap testing is what it is, and we run a catheter through the heart, and we do some testing through the heart to find out if these cattle can actually live at high elevations. When we started doing that, we created absolutely cattle that live longer and live healthier, and it's happening not only at high elevations, but it's happening at low elevations. But then when we started comparing feed analysis, so we did a test with Purina one time, and we said they basically have probably hundreds of thousands of test data where they can create a ration. And they created a ration, and it was like 185% of what we were feeding. So they said, this is what a bull does, this is what this has, and this is what this does. And we said, well, that'll never work for us. We can't feed that. So we cut them down to our ration, which was, their ration would have been 185% of what we were feeding. And then if you get other nutritionists and nutritional guidelines down there, you can find out that we're feeding our cattle, most of the time we're feeding our cattle about 60% of what they would claim they need to eat at all times. In order to get costs of gains and gain ratios, that's a really tricky deal. A lot of people want to know what the cost of gains and gain ratios are. But it all depends on what's your temperature, what's your climate, what's your feedlot, what's all of your, you know, inputs, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really difficult to see that. And what we do know that we did a test, and this was 10 years ago, we did a test, and we were definitely about 15% above everybody else in the feedlot in that test. So we know we're winning on all of those grounds, and then we know that we're seeing customers feed their cattle left. But I can tell you one little study that we do is understand it's a lot of times it's 20 below with a foot of snow, and when we start feeding our heifers, we can actually feed them 1.1% of body weight, and they will do just fine. And that's not a grain ration, that's a roughage ration. And the typical analysis at that level in life with the temperature and third trimester of gestation, they need probably 2.5 or 2.6 of that ration. We're feeding 1.1% and they're okay. We had to quit that practice just because we're doing it right before calving. And if you don't give cattle any energy right before calving, they don't create any colostrum. So we had to kind of quit that practice. But we had them down to 1.1% of body weight, and they were just fine, but they couldn't create colostrum with that little amount of. We actually took a tour with the boys from UK, the guys that hired us to go to the speaking tour. They wanted to see the 44 farms cattle in the feedlot because they're all NHTC, and that was the closest set of cattle to what they do back in UK. So they wanted to see them on this tour. We've seen about 300,000 head of cattle in five different states. And every one of those feedlots told them they were 28% back of average because of the NHTC and how they had to feed them to qualify for their program. When we got to the end, we went to two customers that were feeding our cattle. They fed them exactly like the Walmart 44 Farms cattle, and we were 15% above. So we're beating Walmart 44 Farms by 43% in the feedlot, and we're beating typically the rest of the industry in the feedlot, which is extremely. That's really hard to believe for the fact that we create ranchers' profitability. We're the only breeder out there that completely and totally takes care of the rancher. We want you to make more money, and we know how to make you more money. We're not really so much worried about the feedlot and the carcass, but we have to keep them in the box or they won't buy them, and we can't make you money. So we don't even compete with those guys in that terminal cross venue like they're doing. We still beat them by 43%. So we have enough data that there's no question, no doubt that this is working.
So you're located in Wyoming?
Yes. Boulder, Wyoming is the headquarters, and that's located.
Yeah. And then, so is your customer base more exclusively in that area, or are Da Vinci cattle kind of sprinkled throughout the country?
So we're starting to get national attention because of what's going on. And so they're starting to sprinkle around the country. We've got cattle that actually gone clear to Mississippi. Kind of an interesting study. The guy bought bulls. The year later, he did not buy them. The next year, he called back and he says, we can't deal with them. These bulls. He said, they were that much different. We have to buy them. He said, I just didn't buy bulls because I wanted to test them one year. We go to Missouri, Montana, Iowa, California. So we're kind of spreading out quite a ways now.
Wow, that's cool. The Da Vinci is an Angus breed that is more food efficient, which makes it more profitable. But then there's the whole spin of the environmental impact. If you are converting on less feed, you know, according to the modern science models, then you are creating less greenhouse gases. So that's basically a new approach that you began to take for kind of like marketing to the environmentalists?
You know, we want to definitely market to the environmentalists, you know, and it wasn't our goal to create environmentally friendly cattle. And I'm not positive I even believe in the movement, but we know 50% of the United States and most of the world does. So it is something that we have to get to our customers. So our angle was more so how can we go to the people in the cities, the people in foreign countries, and get them to accept the cattle industry as we're fighting these battles. They drank the wrong Kool-Aid. Oh, and if you look at the elections, it's pretty obvious that people want to drink Kool-Aid. Let's just make that Kool-Aid ours. So why don't we tell them that we're doing good things instead of bad things? And so when they leave the city, the little kid says, I wonder if those are Da Vinci cattle. And dad says, oh, those are horrible cattle. They're ruining the environment. He goes, no, those are Da Vinci cattle. And they're saving the world. Why don't we get that story out there? So right now what's going on is there are too many people lying about what's going on about agriculture. You know, we feed the world. It's the most important industry on earth is the agriculture sector. People need to understand that. And so it's just another layer of how we can get into the people that are actually trying to beat us up and throw us to the wind to say, hey, guys, you're going to all starve to death without beef. It's a fact. Let's just create.
Yeah, and the other major factor of ranching is the conversion of arable land, you know, non-farmland or conventional ag farming, but ranch land where you can run cows that actually improve the landscape, steward the land, give back, fertilize, you know, disturb the soil surface and all these different things while converting themselves into a nutrient-dense food source, right? So not only are ranchers feeding the world, they're feeding the world an incredibly high quality food that is completely natural. It's not printed on a 3D printer. It's not full of insect parts and all these other different things. It's this nutrient dense, high quality food. And the entire process is actually a beneficial process to the planet, stewarding the land. And now you've developed an even more efficient breed that requires less food to convert and is more hardy. So it really is kind of like a perfect storm where you're creating a very high quality product. And by that cow being more efficient, it's more profitable to the rancher. When everything is working properly in a free market, it should be a win for everybody. And I think that's what you're demonstrating with this efficient breed line, is you're bringing a breed to the ranching industry that is creating cost savings to the rancher, which makes them more profitable. And, you know, you're bringing a more efficient cow to the pasture. And, you know, we need cows. We need the beef industry to steward our land and to even create that bison effect, you know, that we had several hundred years ago. And that's what kind of gets lost in all this environmental talk is, you know, that the whole cow farts are bad thing. It just ignores the symbiotic relationship that was created between the land and between the cows that actually creates delicious food for us and actually helps the environment versus hurting the environment.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And what a lot of people don't understand is whether or not a cow's out there eating the grass, when it decomposes, it's going to create the same amount of greenhouse gases. It'll create the same amount of greenhouse gases with or without the cow. The cow just speeds that up, and it's a 10-year spot cycle that unless you can stop it from raining, you can't stop any of these emissions from coming out of it. But what we have to do is to tell them the true story. And let me tell you a story about Boulder, Wyoming. If you look at pictures back in the 30s, it was nothing but sagebrush arid ground, right? And it was creating very little carbon sequestering in that ground. What we did is we created irrigation, and now we run our cows up there. We intense graze them so it grows up, then it stops taking in carbon. We eat it down, and it starts taking carbon in again. And so not only that, we are taking an excessive amount of greenhouse gases in by the grasses, which I am going to argue all day long is much more than a tree can ever do. But we're also creating for the people downstream, there wouldn't be any fish or wildlife from our place clear to the Gulf of California, because all of that water in the ground creates wildlife habitat for 1,000 miles down the road. So when they come to the mountains of Wyoming, they see these beautiful mountains, they see these wonderful green pastures. That was not there when we started. And when they see all of the wildlife and the fish and the habitat, that was not there before we started. If they want to take our water, if they want to kick us out of the business, it'll go back to sagebrush. It won't sequester any carbon, and we won't have any fish or wildlife from our place, because it'll dry up during the winter. So there won't be anything there all winter, fish or wildlife. So they need to understand that we're actually winning on a lot of different venues.
So with the efficiency of the DaVinci cattle, how does your sale price of, so you're selling bulls and heifers?
We basically sell bulls, but we do have some, you know, we don't sell a lot of registered cattle. We don't.
Okay.
Any registered. We created what we think is something elite, and we don't let anybody else have our stuff. So it goes strictly to commercial people that turn them into steers and heifers when we do that.
Okay. Okay. And then do y'all sell any of your, do y'all end up selling any of your beef direct? Do you have any kind of like a direct order program?
We haven't done that yet, but what we are doing, so we're the only answer for all these companies that said that they're going to get 30% reductions by 2030. If you look at the model, they can do feeding programs, they can do things at the feedlot. That's 18% of a cow's life, right? So if they can improve that by X, Y, and Z, they might create 2 to 3% less emissions in a cow's life. And then if they do a little bit of intensive grazing or whatever, they might get 3 or 4. So they can only get to about 7% of their goal of reducing these greenhouse gases by 30% by 2030. Our model shows and our science shows that we can do 28.6% on our own just with the genetics. So right now we are in negotiations with some of the largest retailers in the world. I could tell you, you'll know them by name. Because they have no way to get to their 2030 or their 30% reduction by 2030 goal without us. We're the only game in town to get them there. So right now, we are not doing any of these smaller time mom to pop pasture to plate programs, because we believe if these guys are, I mean, one of the people right now said they went 5 million head in 5 years. We're not going to have a lot of room when that happens. And once the rest of them that decided not to talk to us yet figure out, we're going to control the whole entire beef market, because we're the only game. We'll control the genetics, we'll control the way to get there. And so it will become a worldwide deal of how to get your emissions to where you promised you would get. There's no other way.
Wow. That's pretty game. If you were able to broker a deal for 5 million head, is that something that in your current position, y'all can facilitate?
Well, it's tough to do. It'll be crazy. I don't even know how we'll do it, but I know if God opens the door, you kick it open and something will happen. We'll figure it out. The question was to me by these people is, could you do that? And they said, with all the money in the world, could you do that? And I said, well, yeah, if we AI and we do this, yeah, we could do it. Are we going to be able to do it? I guess only God knows that answer, but We'll give it everything we've got. But with artificial breeding, AI, and with embryos, and with the customer base that we have that have these genetics already, I mean, it's possible, but it won't be an easy test.
Sure. It's never easy when you're recreating or revolutionizing an industry. It always requires a lot of hard work. That's really awesome. So where in like the next 5 years, what do you see for the future of Lucky 7 and the DaVinci cattle breed line?
Well, we're not going to stop doing what we're doing right now unless we find some sort of a negative effect. We're going to keep going. I can't control whether or not we'll get into one of these major contracts. If we don't get into a major contract, I'm pretty certain that we can at least get into a contract of maybe pasture to plate with some sort of maybe smaller supermarket. We're pretty positive that that'll be a seller. But we don't know. If I was to ever set goals in my life, I'd have never got to the point that I am right now. So I'm not a goal setter. It's just like I just get out of bed and I do the very best I can every day. And if I can't do it for myself, I can do it for God, and I just do whatever I have to do. And so I can't think it's going to be small. I mean, I never think small anymore. I don't know.
How many current head are you running?
Right now we have about 3,000 mama cows. Some of those we have in a feedlot, but we can run about 2,000 or 2,200 on our own. And then we sell about 400 bulls a year, and we offer a 4-year guarantee. So they're guaranteed basically to get 100 head of calves off every one of those bulls. 400 times 100, that kind of gives you the answer of where we're, that's where we can start. And then we've got a couple other producers that are, feed efficiency game is really difficult. There's some people testing for it, but they don't know what they're doing. And the technology is so bad that you have to be like a rocket science to figure it out. And I'm blessed to have a couple people working for me that are very good at what they do. They'll break your leg if you feed wrong, because it's that important to us. And so I have a few people underneath of me that I think are doing it close enough to write that we can bring in. And then we have customers, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, that's pretty neat. You kind of have a network. So as you're facilitating these potentially very large numbers, like it would also be benefiting other ranchers that you kind of have an affinity relationship with. So kind of like a rising tide lifts all ships idea.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And understand when we're dealing with these people, and like I said, I can't tell you, but you know, you don't have to drive very far from your place here to see their signs. But understand, these guys that we're dealing with, they don't want to put us in that position and fail either. So they're going to, they're trying to work with us to get there. And so even though it may be tough, it's just, you just go in there and you be honest and say, hey, man, we ran into a hurdle. Let's do this, 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 and this. They want the same goal as we do. They're not just a bunch of mean people that are out there saying, oh, we just want to take them up there so we can steal all our money. They want to benefit everybody too. And so because of that fact, I do believe that we can get there. I don't think there's any doubt. And it'll benefit everybody. It'll benefit every single person because they'll make more money on their ranch. And then at the same point in time, story will go out to the city. So their city people will stop beating up all the ranchers and farmers all throughout the world as well. Once they understand how important we are, if we go out there and we'll baby nurture a little bitty piece of seed, hundreds of thousands of these seeds, we'll stay up all night, we'll fight grizzly bears, we'll do whatever we have to do this. How much more would we do for people? And people understand who we really are. They're going to like us a lot.
Yeah, I completely agree. We're just a small family, and we run, we have a Hereford bull, and we run Black Angus. We do a Hereford Angus cross, and we sell here to our local community, and it's just really neat getting to interact with people and interacting with the community. And with all of this attention and all of this negative environmental impact cost simultaneously happening with the ultra-processed food industry and people becoming ill from eating, the center of the grocery store, not only is the rancher providing the environmental solution and the beautifying of the landscape solution, but the rancher, in my opinion, and our family's completely carnivores, that's all we eat basically is red meat and eggs. So we have a really strong conviction that this, for the time and age we live in, this is the food of choice that has the greatest health benefit that there is. And we definitely need our ranchers. We love our ranchers. We're doing it the best that we know how, just stumbling along. And it's been a great adventure for us, and we enjoy it. And I love promoting other ranchers, drawing attention. I think it's absolutely incredible what you're doing. And it's really good to hear that you are getting some attention. And I wanted to help shed some more light on it, just to bring some more attention to what you are doing, because it's rather remarkable and it's quite opposite of the current narrative. We need to, the narrative, especially in Europe, is, farmers are the problem, ranchers are the problem, we need to reduce all this stuff. I don't exactly know what we're going to eat, but, you know, all these ranchers and farmers have to go away. And, you know, I guess they'll substitute us all with crickets or whatever. But, you know, I think it's really awesome what you're doing. Oh, and I want to interject, too. Every guest on the Fearless podcast gets a gift. I wanted to ask you, Jim, do you drink coffee?
I do drink coffee.
Okay, so now we have
drink coffee.
We have whole bean ground, and we just recently added the K-Cup pod. So if you had like a K-Cup machine, you know, we have the 12 packs of the K-Cup, or we can send you a bag of ground or whole bean. We have a light, medium, and a dark roast. What's your flavor of choice?
So I'm kind of redneck. I just like really good coffee. I don't like it flavor. And I like it to be ground because some days I'll just cook it on a campfire and cook it right off of a pan. So I don't have a lot of this other technology. So I
fancy stuff.
You just set it up.
You do the cowboy coffee.
Water, drink it. Yeah, exactly.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, I'll make sure that I get your address and I'll send you a bag of ground. And just let me know if you want a light, medium, or dark roast.
Dark roast, I'll tell you that right now. So dark roast
okay.
is true.
Okay, great, great. Well, this has been awesome. As we wrap up, is there any kind of closing statements or anything that you want to leave the audience with?
You know, I think the only thing that we need to tell them is that we need to understand that the people that are creating the genetics today are creating them so that the seed stock producer, the bull raiser, the packer and the feedlot can make all the money, and they're not doing a lot for the ranch. And we need to really look at these EPDs, the DNA and all this stuff that they're doing right now, and say it's not really working. We got bigger death loss, we have more cows getting open, we have less breed up. There's some things that are not happening. Yeah, we want to have a quality beef product at the rail, but at the end of the day, we need to start working on making ranchers profitable. We got to have the ranchers. It's really hard to make a feedlot full without the ranchers doing it first.
Right. And if the rancher is not profitable, they sell to the real estate investor, and then their ranch gets developed into a multifamily HOA, and the world starves to death. So it's really important. It's very critical. And if you are developing a way to make the rancher more profitable, the entire world will benefit from that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I've never ever tasted asphalt, but I don't think you'd ever want to eat very much of it.
No, I have no interest in asphalt or any bug derivative product that comes from a cricket or a cockroach or anything like that. I'll take a ribeye all day long over any of that stuff. And Jim, it's been great having you on. I will put all the links down below to Lucky 7 Angus Ranch, and where's the best place for people to contact you if somebody wants to contact you?
They can email me at cowboybulls@hotmail.com or just go to our website. If I give them phone number, it'll be hard. Just lucky7angus.com. There'll be phone numbers there. It'll have some information. If they want to contact me, that may be the easiest.
Great, great. Well, this has been a great interview. I appreciate you, Jim, what y'all are doing out there. And thank y'all for listening. If y'all do enjoy our program, remember this is a value for value proposition. Go on over to thetexasboys.com and check us out over there. It's a great way to support the channel. And we will see y'all on the next show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.